Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk food and cooking today with two guests who have no shortage of experience in the kitchen and writing about preparing delicious dishes. And you'll find that there is a great difference between knowing how to cook and knowing how to write about cooking. And we'll talk about that in a moment. Chef Bruce Weinstein writes a monthly column for WeightWatchers.com, as well as regular features for The Washington Post, Cooking Light and Fine Cooking. He, along with his partner in life and in the kitchen, Mark Scarborough, who together have published 21 cookbooks over the past 14 years, including Grain Mains, 101 Surprising and Satisfying Whole Grain Recipes for Every Meal of the Day, Cooking for Two, 120 Recipes for Every Day and Those Special Nights, and The Ultimate Cookbook, a whopper of a book, 900 new recipes, thousands of ideas, and some other books I'm going to tell you about in a minute, which put these guys high on the list of esteem. Today, Bruce and Mark will be talking about their time in the kitchen and taking your questions on cooking, including recipes and techniques. Get in now while you can. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website. It's wamc.org/VoxPop. You can also comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. We also have a nice link to Bruce and Mark's blog, which is often hilarious, always interesting. And you can also tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. But the number to call, again, 800-348-2551. All right, now, we've dispensed with that. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ray. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Ray.
You know, the introduction, and I forget which book it was. I photocopied it and then put the book. I think it's the
Cooking Know-How.
Cooking Know-How.
I saw you at the photocopy.
You photocopied something? No. My agent's right on the
You know
line
what?
Right
I'll give it to you at the end. I just wanted to read a little bit about this because
you just can't sell it.
It says a lot. That's right. So this is the very beginning of the introduction of Cooking Know-How, your 337th book. Give a man something for dinner and he'll be happy. Teach him how to make dinner and you'll be even happier. Nonetheless, knowing how to cook has challenged lots of men, women too. What most people learn is a specific recipe, how to make this pasta sauce or that loaf of bread. What about learning how to cook in general? And not just the how, but the how come. That requires a technique book. I'll skip a bit. The bad news, it's not just those chefy techniques that undercut learning how to cook. It's also the sticky, sweet romanticism that clings to food writing in general. And that's what you guys don't have in your books. They're a lot of fun to read.
Thank you.
And frankly, anybody who writes a book, a huge book about ham, goes right to the top of the list.
Well, we should tell everybody listening that Mark is the writer, so those lovely words that make it great to read are his.
Sweet romantic words.
And I'm the chef, so the recipes are mine. And that ham book, we actually won a James Beard nomination for that book.
So. The introduction to that, it's like Charlotte's Web.
It is kind of like Charlotte's Web.
It's amazing.
It's about, we moved up from New York City up to rural New England several years ago. And it's about raising our own pig and then driving said pig to slaughter. And when I say slaughter, I guess I just mean a guy's house with upholstered furniture on the front decks.
And a chain hanging from a tree.
You know, it's a cinematic description of the whole thing.
Yeah. But we named him Wilbur. And after that, every year, we're working on Wilbur 6.
Oh, good.
And they get sweeter and sweeter.
Tastier.
Learn more about Wilbur's.
Good for you. And, of course, how many cooking writers get their own audiobook, and you have one coming.
Is that crazy? We have an audiobook happening.
Lobsters scream when you boil them.
And 100 other myths about food and cooking, because lobsters, in fact, do not scream. They don't have vocal cords,
right,
so they can't scream.
It always entertains my children in the store to see the lobsters. And they say, oh, look at the lovely lobsters.
Lovely.
Yeah.
They are nasty, aggressive, warmongering little critters of the ocean.
Yeah. And tasty. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Chef Bruce Weinstein here and Mark Scarborough, and they have written 21 books. The new one is Grain Mains, and, I was so enamored with the ham book that I never actually looked at the grain book.
Thanks.
Grain Mains is, what we did with Grain Mains is we decided to take whole grains and not flours. It's not baking. It's not about making whole wheat breads.
Yeah.
It's taking the whole grains themselves, oat groats and wheat berries and rye berries and triticale and millet and all of that sorghum and making main course dishes out of it. And it's not vegan or vegetarian. So there are vegan and vegetarian recipes in the book, but there are a lot of meat-friendly recipes.
And I made a commitment when we were writing that book to the reader that we discussed in the introduction, which is that everybody talks about the dietary points of whole grain, but we don't ever want to talk about it. We want to talk about the culinary points of whole grains, how they work in recipes, why they taste good. As we say, as I say, I guess, in the introduction, we want to talk about whole grains without ever mentioning your colon.
So oh, well, that's good. I mean, that's
it
admirable.
It seems like a good thing
yeah,
to us.
Absolutely.
It's all about your mouth. It's about how they taste.
So how did it start? Now, obviously, a fairly successful franchise is now in progress. Is there essential philosophical reason that you started that sort of flows through these books?
Well, I mean, I think it's just both our passions for food and our passions for cooking that really led to this. And, you know, we each bring a certain skill to the table here. We both know food. We both know it inside and out. And Mark can certainly cook quite well. And I could write, but not nearly as well as Mark can. So I think just together we've managed to sell a lot of books.
We had a passion for food, and we gave up completely different careers in order to follow that obsession. Bruce gave up a creative director career at an advertising agency in New York, and I gave up a tenure track job in my fifth year as an academic. So
oh, really?
We both.
You both are doing a little more exciting work now.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's certainly more delicious, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
And, we teach cooking all over the world, because we teach cooking classes on Holland America cruise ships. And it is fascinating when you get people in the kitchen and you watch what they do and you see how, even when they're following your recipe, how you've got to walk around the room and turn up burners and change their positions of knives and keep people from cutting their fingers off. And,
But I still say that,
I've done that.
Exciting is a nice way to put no pension. But yes, you're right. It's more exciting.
Well, now you have the audio book, so you're all set.
Yeah.
I mean, after 8 years, you're good to go. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. First caller on the line today, Tim in Gilderland. Hi, Tim. You're on.
Hey, Ray. A question for both of the gentlemen. This is a very easy question. It's going to be very simplistic. I love to cook, but one of the issues is that when I go to this is buying fish.
Okay.
And my question is, and when I say it's simple, it's very simple, is what is the best way for me to know that the fish is fresh? I understand it should not actually smell like fish.
Good fresh fish doesn't smell like fish.
It
smells like the ocean. It smells clean and fresh. As Mark always says to me, and to people, it should smell like the ocean on a clear, beautiful day. It should not smell like low tide at the marsh flats.
Right. If it smells like low tide at the marsh flats in August, it's not right. And you in the supermarket should always ask to smell the fish. Even if you buy fish at a supermarket where there's no fishmonger, there's not a guy actually at the counter working, you should ask someone there to undo the package of fish and smell
That's
it.
Right.
I know.
Will they do it?
Yeah, absolutely.
If they won't, go to another store.
You'll be a crank in the store, but it is the way to know.
Well, I will tell you this, Tim. If you go to a store and all they have are salmon fillets shrink-wrapped in the little styrofoam tray, and there's no one there to open them or they won't let you open them, go to the freezer. You're much better in that case buying a piece of frozen fish, which you're almost guaranteed will be fresh when you thaw it out, than buy what has never been frozen if you can't check it out first. It's also easier if you're buying a whole fish, because a whole fish, there are many more clues as whether it's fresh. Are the eyes clear or are they cloudy? Are the scales flat and firm or are they starting to pull up? Is it slimy or is it not slimy? So there are many more ways to tell. Once it's filleted and there's no skin left and there's no head on it, it gets much harder to tell.
That's right. And the only other thing to watch for in terms of smell is in frozen fish, because a lot of fish is frozen directly at harvest, even on the trawlers. But when you thaw frozen fish, just take a small whiff of it. Here's why. Because some trawlers do leak gasoline into the hull.
Oh, man.
And if you smell a gasoline smell, no.
All right, you led me into another question.
Okay,
you're talking about trawlers, and we're hearing things on the news about the shortage of bluefin tuna, and how expensive they are. That Japanese restaurateurs will come to Long Island.
Yeah, they will.
They will buy bluefin tuna off the boat.
And do you know they'll pay up to upwards of $50,000 a tuna?
Oh,
yikes!
There was a big tuna that was caught about a month ago that I think got an enormous amount of money for it. Do you have any thoughts about this? And then I'll let you go. Is that why can't we farm bluefin tuna as we farm salmon and trout?
All right, fair question. It's
tuna
deep water,
is
right?
Tuna is a different kind of fish. Besides the fact that it is a very deep water fish, it's a hunting fish. It is a fish
predator, right?
It's a predator fish, and it's very difficult. Salmon are not predators. It's easy to farm animals that are prey animals. I mean, salmon are prey animals. It's like we could farm chickens and we could farm cows like we used to. But you don't farm lions and you don't farm hawks. I mean, the predators are more difficult to farm.
Well, that's good. That's an interesting thing because I thought that would be the easy solution to this whole thing is that because we farm salmon and we farm trout.
Yeah. The easy solution is not to eat the big predator fish at all because not only are we reducing their numbers, but they live a long time and eat so many other fish that all the toxins that are in the water start to build up in their body. So it's really not healthy to eat those fish, swordfish and bluefin tuna very often anyway.
I don't care. I like bluefin tuna.
Okay, there you go.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a break. Tim, thanks a lot for the call.
Our guests, Chef Bruce Weinstein and writer Mark Scarborough, and we'll be back with more Vox Pop. We'll get your cooking questions coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Maria College Albany, offering an RN baccalaureate completion program, associate degrees and professional certificate programs, day, evening, weekend, and online classes. Aspire, achieve, become. MariaCollege.edu. Bow Wow Bathhouse Resort and Daycare, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. For over 7 years, providing 10 hours of daily indoor-outdoor play, professional grooming, and retail shop, thebowwowbathhouse.com. The Alternative Baker, Rosendale. Artisan all-butter baked goods, made from scratch, handcrafted lemon velvet cakes, and egg sandwiches daily, where taste is everything, lemoncakes.com. And Subsidium Technologies, working to help enterprises use custom communications and cloud services to help improve information technology environments, subsidiumtech.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. The number to call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are here, and they have written 21 books on cooking and some both informative, hilarious stuff, including Lobster Scream When You Boil Them, soon to be out in audiobook. My favorite book, perhaps of all time, Ham, which I highly recommend, if not for the writing, for the beautiful pictures of ham.
And Ray, let's not forget the subtitle of that book, Ham, An Obsession with the Hindquarter.
Well, you see, there you go. Let's go back to the phones. It's Mark in Salem. Mark, you're on.
Yes. I've been using a book called Preventing and Reversing Heart Disease by Dr. Esselstein, mostly for my mother, and I've been doing a lot of the cooking. And he is very down on using oil for when you're frying vegetables or something. And I know that you use oil to bring the temperature up so that you can get the results you want. And I've been using non-fat broth, vegetable broth or mushroom broth. And I wondered if you might have any ideas as to how I could bring the temperature above the boiling point of broth and yet not use oil.
Well, Mark, first of all, you're never, unless you live on another planet with different gravity and air pressure, you're really not going to get that broth up higher without, then you could use a pressure cooker, but that's going to then cause a lot of other problems going on. So you're basically looking at just poaching and lightly steaming your vegetables. But let me say this about fat. A little bit of fat is not the enemy. You need fat to live.
We use omega-3 type fats
in fish. That's a great thing. And Mark and I have this philosophy about fat. And all liquid fats cost 120 calories a tablespoon. So first of all, you don't need to use a tablespoon. A little bit is great. But if you use a higher flavored fat, a good olive oil, a good roasted walnut oil, which is really good in omega-3s as well, you're going to get a lot of flavor and you'll use a lot less of it to get the same result.
But given that, Mark, what you said, this is Mark talking, and given what you said, Mark, Bruce is right. But I mean, you know, broth is going to boil at 212.
Yeah, or thereabouts.
Yeah, or thereabouts, depending on certain amounts of particulate matter and salt in it. So honestly, it's just not, you're never going to get it up that high. So
you're never going to get the results that you get with using fat or using oil. What about the fat-free spray oils like they have?
Well, they're not actually, to be honest, they're not actually fat-free. It's that the amount you spray in a pan is
so little.
That the FDA allows them to call themselves fat-free. They're not.
That can is full of fat.
So that said, it's an excellent choice. Some fat-free oil.
Like, excuse me, I have like olive oil spray cooking.
Yep.
It says zero fat.
Yeah.
You know, it's not. It's less than half a milligram.
But if you do a light spray of that in a nonstick pan, you're going to get a lovely sautéing effect. You'll be able to get a nice brown caramelization going, and you'll be using very little fat. And you'll actually, I think you might enjoy the flavor a little bit more than cooking
and
it in broth.
If, just to build on what Bruce just said, if you need to replace your nonstick skillet, if it's over a year, year and a half, 2 years old, replace it now, and you'll get better results, and, you know, you'll love that nonstick spray.
I use Griswold.
what's Griswold?
Griswold iron pots.
Oh, excellent. Well,
I inherited about 50 of them from my great aunt.
Perfect.
And I bet they have a lovely nonstick coating that's naturally on there at this point.
They do.
Fantastic.
And the food tastes fantastic when it comes out of it.
Excellent.
Perfect. Perfect.
She ran a speakeasy back in the 20s.
Wow. All right.
She cooked and things, and I inherited all the different kinds.
I didn't know about that.
Probably cooking gin in them in the old days.
Well, she made beer, but she didn't have any bathtub gin. But she had four or five Dutch ovens and dozens and dozens of skillets from everywhere from 20 inches down to the size for an egg. And when she died, her daughter gave me all of it. So I used them all.
Well, Mark, thanks for the call, bud. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, you know, I see these ads on late night TV for these miraculous ceramic, no stick, no oil needed pans. Mm-hmm. What's the deal? Are they legit?
Well, ceramic no stick is different than Teflon no stick. One is sprayed on and one is different. The ceramic no stick is better for the environment and better for you in the long term, but they're not as good a non-stick coating as the Teflon non-stick.
Well, that's not what the commercials say.
I know. And it's cookware is all about the gauge of the metal. How heavy is the pan? How well does it conduct heat? So you want whatever nonstick you buy, you want the pan to be heavy. You want it to be fairly thick. You want it to be able to distribute evenly. And know this, when you buy a nonstick pan, it's not for life. And I don't care what lifetime guarantee they all, even the high-end makers like Allclad say lifetime guarantee. But in the end, no nonstick
pans. Hey, can I get in here?
Yeah, sure. That's Mark.
So,
go ahead, Mark.
Go ahead. The point, I think, is don't use vegetable oil, right? Don't use canola oil.
Don't use tasteless oil.
If I could get canola oil and vegetable oil out of people's houses, I would do it. They're probably an underwriter
so
at
what,
this station.
Not really.
And I would have people using olive oil. I would have them using walnut oil, pecan oil, pistachio, full-flavored oils.
Duck fat, chicken fat.
Then you need a whole arsenal of oils.
But you can use less.
You little jars. You buy these tiny little jars. You can go to the supermarket, and you could buy four little bottles. Because if you buy big bottles, they'll go rancid before you use them all anyway.
Yeah.
So you buy a little bottle of peanut oil, a little bottle of almond oil, a good little bottle of olive oil, and then you have these to cook with.
I think you need to cook with them because they bring more flavor to food, and more flavor is more satiety, and you use less. You're going to fill a skillet with canola oil because it doesn't taste like anything.
No, it sure doesn't. But, I mean, that's an advantage at times, right?
Well, very rarely. Yeah. It's very rare that I'll say use an oil that's tasteless so you don't add something else to it. Usually, if you're adding calories and that's all oil is, add flavor. Why add all those calories with no flavor?
Asparagus sautéed in a little pistachio oil.
Yum.
That is fantastic.
All right. Well, let's go back to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. Chef Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are here. And Jeff in LaGrangeville, you're there.
Hi there. How are you guys doing today?
Good. You're on.
Great. I have two questions, but I'll lead with one that I came up with while I'm just listening to you about the oil. Should I be keeping it in the refrigerator?
For the most part, yes. Olive oil, no, on your counter, unless you're not using it quickly enough. But if you're buying nut oil, or God forbid you're buying canola oil, yeah, you want to keep it in the refrigerator because it will go rancid before you get a chance to use the whole thing.
Any of those big oils like peanut oil or any of them will go rancid. And when they solidify in your refrigerator, Jeff, because they will when they're in the cold, you just need to keep the bottle or can sealed and run it under warm tap water and to loosen up just the top of it.
The other trick I find, that because I keep most of my oils in the refrigerator, I keep them on the door. It's a little less cold than in the back of the fridge, so sometimes they stay least pourable.
All right.
Okay, my second question, which is actually really the reason I called, when you guys were talking about the fish before and you came to the frozen fish, and that when it's thawing, you have to see if it smells like gasoline or some kind of fuel oil.
Yep.
I assume that the next thing that you were going to say is that you just either take it back to the store or toss it. I assume there's no way to save it.
You take it back.
Yeah,
there
is no way to save it.
And may I just say, I am this huge proponent of taking it back to the store. I think that's, people throw it out, and stores then are not brought to responsibility for their produce, etc., that's going bad on the shelf. I'm a crank. I admit it.
Yeah.
People don't want to see me coming.
How many stores are you banned from?
Yeah, 5,000.
Save your receipt, because you need to bring that back to the store. Then I got to tell you that a lot of stores that I have, and I have brought food back many times, they don't even want it. You just bring the receipt back and tell them it was bad. And you'll learn the store. There are some stores that I have gone back and they want the food, and others I know at this point, I just bring the receipt in and say that was bad and they'll just give me
money
back.
But that's because you have a relationship with those stores.
I do.
So.
I do.
All right.
They see you coming and they just open the register without even
I love it. You want to go shopping with me?
Hey, Jeff, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go over to Jay in Litchfield, Connecticut. Jay, you're on.
Hi. Enjoying the show. This is a different topic, but I've got a bumper crop of wild leeks, ramps,
in my woods,
and I wonder what if you've got a favorite recipe. And I heard the other day that some people pickle them, and I wonder how you go about that. And it doesn't sound very enticing, but I might like to try pickling.
Okay,
have you got a recipe?
Time out. The ugly American wants to know, what's a ramp?
A ramp is actually a wild leek.
Okay.
It's an onion kind of thing. It's very, very small. Imagine the thickness of a stalk from a daisy.
Okay.
And then it has these green leaves on top and a little red and white bulb at the bottom. And they're actually kind of sweet, like onions, but they're very oniony.
And now is the time.
Oh, they're
right
very
now.
Seasonal. They grow now, and they'll be in the stores now for about 2 weeks, and then they'll be gone. And so this is the time when foodies go crazy for ramps. And there are a couple of things to do with them, Jay. I like to just saute them in olive oil in a skillet, or even throw them on the grill just until they get a little wilted and the leaves get charred and you can eat the whole thing. But you talked about pickling. I love pickled ramps. And the best way to do it is you can just cut off the green leaves, stick them in a sterilized large canning jar, boil up equal parts, like 1 cup or 2 cups of sugar with 2 cups of vinegar, handful of your favorite spices, pour that over and let them sit overnight, and they're amazing.
Now, may I just say, this is Mark adding, that while it's always done in olive oil, just once try ramps sauteed in butter. Just once. Mm-hmm. With butter and a little salt. They're delicious in butter.
I like the sound of that.
Because it gives them the slightly sour, you know, butter has a slightly sour edge that other oils don't. And so it just kind of perks up that sweet leek flavor.
Okay, so now you've sauteed those ramps in butter. Now I want you to get a pizza dough and spread that out.
Yeah.
And I want you to spread a thin coating of pesto on the pizza dough, put those sauteed ramps on top of that and a little Parmesan cheese and bake it.
Yum.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I like just plain sauteing them. Maybe I'm going to try that.
Okay,
I've tried soup. I've tried it in soup, and it makes a good soup, but... I want to try something different. So
excellent.
I like that idea. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jay.
Thanks a lot. You guys are like ramps. I remember reading a section of one of your books. I was just thumbing through this morning when I found out I was doing this show. And there's a whole bit about ramps in there.
They're a huge culinary thing. And this is the time of year when people who are really into food and foodies go crazy because they're in the markets. Or if you're lucky like that Jay guy was, you can get them out in your own yards.
But wow. Neat. But just don't go randomly picking stuff. And,
no.
You know,
if you don't know what you're doing, don't eat anything that grows on your lawn.
No.
Especially not if you like...
Especially not my lawn. let's go to Pam in Norfolk, Connecticut. Pam, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about farmed fish, farmed salmon, for instance, that versus the wild salmon. And as I understand it, farmed salmon can be diseased. It carries various things that then will spread out eventually into the wild. And I just wanted to know what your opinions were on that.
Well, this is Mark talking. I think that part of our opinion on it is that farm salmon does have problems. Part of the good thing about farm salmon is you can know the producers of it. Certain farms actually practice responsible farming. I know that there are really strict rules, for example, on the Faroe Islands. And the Faroe Islands salmon is coming to the United States now in huge quantities. And they're very strict environmental and ethically responsible rules.
That's what I used when I made that cured salmon 2 weeks ago.
Right, about how to raise them. Other farm salmon is not so good. And so here's what I would recommend. Ask the fishmonger where you buy salmon what they know about where this came from. If they seem uninformed or, God forbid, surly, take your business elsewhere. Nobody needs to spend their money with ill-informed or surly people.
And let me add that, you know, wild fish is a wonderful thing when you can get it, but there is a limited resource there. I mean, we are how many billion? Seven? Are there 7 billion people on this planet
now? Yeah, something. I don't know. They're all going down the highway right now.
And there's no way we can all keep eating wild. So if we're going to keep eating fish, it's going to have to be farmed. So Mark is absolutely right. Find out all you can about the farm, and let's just buy things from the responsible farmers.
All right.
Well, I think that's very important. I know the taste is different from wild to farm.
Yes, very
it's
much
fattier.
So.
Farmed is fattier. It's farmed is fattier, and often coloring is added. So yeah, you have to be aware of who's doing it.
Pam, well, thanks a lot.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks, Pam.
Day. Let's go. The number to call, by the way, we have one open line: 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Chef Bruce Weinstein. And kitchen expert, writer, Mark Scarborough is here. I don't know what to call you, except that you're a writer.
Mark is good.
All right, Mark is good. Bill in Beacon, you're on.
Hi, I wanted to ask a question about frozen fish, but first I wanted to recommend, you were talking about bluefin tuna. There's a fantastic book called Song for the Blue Ocean by Carl Safina.
Okay.
And he talks a lot about the bluefin tuna.
No clue.
The really beautiful
book. Look it up.
I'll look it up. Cool.
Nice. Can you say that title one more time?
Yes. Song for the Blue Ocean.
All right.
Nice.
Thank you. Okay. I'm going to write that down.
And just about frozen fish. I never have luck with frozen fish. How do you defrost it? What's the process that you go through once you take it out of the freezer?
I tend to defrost everything, if I can, in the refrigerator.
Right.
I'll take the fish out. I'll put it in a bowl or in a plate and stick it in the refrigerator for 24 to 48 hours until it's thawed. Anytime you thaw something at room temperature, you're running the risk of all sorts of things happening. I will say that the only difference there is when a shellfish. If I'm thawing scallops or shrimp, I'll do those in a colander running under cold water, and that just takes four minutes.
A lot of people put frozen chicken and steaks and all in water and freeze, and you know, change the water every 20 minutes on the counter. But I think that really fish is somehow gross that way, right? It gets a slimy texture.
Well, I mean, it comes from water, right?
I know, but it gets kind of slimy when you do that bowl of water trick.
And what when you say you don't have luck with it, what do you mean, Bill?
I get this coho salmon that's frozen, and I don't do it that much because it always seems really dry.
It's falling apart. That's part of that is the nature of coho. Coho is a wild salmon, and it's very, very lean. There's very little fat in it.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens when you freeze any meat and then thaw it is you lose moisture.
Right.
Always. That is whether it's a steak or a chicken breast or a turkey breast or shrimp or a piece of salmon. So if you take a very, very lean piece of meat like a coho salmon and freeze it and then thaw it, you're losing moisture in it. So it's just not the best subject for the freezer to begin with.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Yeah,
thanks,
Bill. Thank you. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. And Felicia in Crumville, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
My question is about back to olive oil. So we're not supposed to cook with vegetable oil, but when you want to sort of pan fry for a few minutes anything, say fish, for example, I don't know if you're not supposed to use olive oil for really hot frying. So what do you use if it's not olive oil, or can you use olive oil? And is my information wrong?
Well, Alicia, I use olive oil all the time. I won't use my most expensive, highly flavored olive oil. But we wrote this book, Lobsters Scream When You Boil Them, which is all about food myths, and we talk about this in the book.
Well, it's the deal about the olive oil thing is that it shouldn't be reheated over and over and over again. When olive oil is used in big vat fryers in, let's say, a huge restaurant, and it's brought up to high temperature and drops and up and drop and up and drop, over repeated times, certain bad chemicals can get knocked into the mix.
Really?
And it becomes a possible source of certain kinds of contaminants. However, that said, you are never probably going to do that in your house. You're probably never going to be bringing olive oil up and down and up and down and up.
You're going to throw it out after you use
it? Yeah, probably. Or maybe one extra use. So don't worry about that high temperature thing. Of course, you don't want to get it up at the flash point where the stuff could ignite, but that's...
What is that temperature?
365, right? 360, jeez, along there?
Once it starts smoking, then you have to be wary, because after that, it can ignite. And the better the oil, the less it's refined, the more flavor it has, the lower the smoke point. So yes, if you get a very expensive olive oil that tastes buttery and tastes like olives, the higher the temperature you put it at, the more likely you are to get a smoking faster and lose those flavors. So don't get the most expensive, but get an olive oil. You want something that has flavor. Again, we say don't fry with vegetable oil because it's tasteless. You're adding calories without flavor.
All right.
Okay, and then walnut oil is
wonderful.
You can do the same thing in that, like fry a fish in that.
Oh, of course. And there's a difference. And there's a difference, Felicia, between, and you'll see this when you go to buy nut oils, toasted nut oils and untoasted. Toasted have much more flavor, but untoasted will let you get to a little higher temperature. So the choice is yours.
All right.
Oh, so see that? I learned something today. Well, thank you.
Thank you for being here, Felicia. And we're going to take a break here and back for the home stretch in a moment. 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop.
Support for WAMC comes from Mount St. Mary College, Newburgh, offering bachelor's and master's degrees in business, education, and nursing. Transfer admissions event for college-age students and adults with college credits, May 22nd, msmc.edu. The Honest Wade Food Co-op in Albany, offering local and organic produce, natural groceries, artisan cheeses, and more, honestwade.coop. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, and resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974, preservenys.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. And our guests are Chef Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough. And Patrick Donges, our producer, joins us from Studio D with questions from whatever.
Hi, Ray. Hello. Gentlemen.
Yes.
Pamela on Facebook asks, what is the best vegetable oil to use for healthy cake baking?
Mm.
Well, once again, I'm going to talk about oils that have lots of flavor. And when I use oil in my baking, I tend to use almond oil or walnut oil or pecan oil because they add just enough flavor and not they don't overwhelm.
You have not lived, right, until you have made a genoise or a cake, a sponge cake, with walnut oil.
Instead of butter, walnut oil? Oh, it just gives you this little hint of flavor.
You might as well give up now. You haven't lived.
My grandmother used to make cakes with mayonnaise.
Your grandmother must come from the part of country my grandmother comes
from. Yeah, Hempstead, Long Island.
Oy vey.
We got one more.
All right, Patrick, go ahead.
Virginia on WAMC.org asks, she's got two questions. Is there such a thing as white wheat flour? My children won't eat whole wheat anything, but I know if they couldn't see it, they'd be fine with it. And then, does Bruce have a favorite main dish to cook or to eat?
Yeah, Bruce.
All right.
There is, actually, you can get a white whole wheat flour now. It's high-end stuff. I think King Arthur makes it. I think Bob's Red Mill gets it. So just go online and Google white whole wheat flour, and you'll find the brands. And so it is available.
Okay.
And as for my favorite dish to eat, give me a grilled, just a nice charred grilled steak or a steamy lobster.
Mm. All right. Yeah,
that's it.
Are you done,
right,
Patrick?
All set.
You hungry now?
Yeah, oh yeah.
All right, that's our producer, Patrick Donges. Back to the phones we go. It's, well, I don't know what that was. Kate and Heath, you're on.
Hi. Hello. This
Hi,
is
Kate.
Such a great program.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, I love it. And I also just noticed how many men are calling, which I think is just really interesting.
It is great.
Like, if it's less intimidating, you know, in terms of, like, men being cooks and whatnot, they get more comfortable. Anyway.
It's a very sexist thing to say.
So,
go with it, Kate.
Well, you know, I'm not
going to.
So, my question, I love the oil thing, and I'm totally, like, I do a lot of recipes out of Marcella Hazen's Essentials of Italian Cooking.
Yep.
And she's got vegetable oil all over the book.
Of course.
So, but why of course? Like, if it's not, like.
Because well, this, yeah, go ahead, Mark, answer.
Yeah, thanks. Let me get
Take
in here
a number,
just
all right?
Good Lord. I think that it is a kind of old, how do I say, older paradigm. Listen, I learned to cook with Marcella's books.
Uh-huh.
It is they are the first books I ever cooked out of right out of college. And I learned to cook basically based on her. But, you know, olive oil was still, listen, I'm old enough to remember when it was still a little bit of an exotic product on the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd look around for it. Nowadays, I bet you that Marcella would be writing everything practically with olive oil and butter. Those books were written for an American market where olive oil was still a little new.
Exotic.
Yeah.
I want to add also, vegetable oil is also cheaper. And so a lot of books are going to say use vegetable oil because you can get a 2-quart thing of Wesson vegetable oil for what, $2.99 versus, you know, $13, $14 for a bottle of other oils.
All right.
As we said, they have so much flavor, you'll use less, so they taste better, and they're better for you.
So when I'm, like, filling up my pan here with, like, you know, a quarter inch of oil to, like, fry my eggplant for my eggplant parmesan, do that with olive oil.
I would do it with olive oil, but you don't need to buy the most expensive olive
oil. Right. No, I know.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you. All right.
One more question here. Salt. I read recently that the difference between a good cook and a great cook is knowing how to salt.
Well, yes,
absolutely. And I feel like I'm totally in the dark about that.
What do you mean, how to salt? Well,
yeah, like knowing when to add more
and that
kind of thing.
Okay.
Or if you've added too much. And I feel like I'm a decent cook, but salt is a mystery to me.
Well, the only way to really know how much salt is in a dish is to taste it. You got to taste it.
If
it tastes salty, not. But by and large, I would say that you salt at the end of cooking. There are certain times where that's not true. For example, if you put salt on vegetables in a pan, they'll leach more moisture.
Right.
If you want to leach more. If you get salt on the outside of a steak on a grill, it'll help it to dry out a bit and get crunchy.
But if you're making a soup or a stew at the end, because you're going to cook it for 2 or 3 hours and then it's reduced the amount, and it won't be. If you put salt in and taste at the beginning, it'll taste completely different at the end.
Okay. Yeah. And when you say end, when it's on the table?
No, right before you bring it to the table.
Okay.
Kate, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Kate.
All right, a lot of questions about oil today, but that's how we roll here. let's go over to line 3 and CJ in Boston Lake. You're on.
Oh, hello. Thank you very much. This is like a moisture oil base from the gutters here from the heathen.
okay.
I don't know what he
now,
said.
Well,
but
you know,
we'll
one thing I noticed is when I eat, only recently, when I eat organic apples.
Yeah.
They don't have a certain, what do you call it, taste, real bitter taste. And my friend says they use arsenic in the spray of non-organic apples.
Is this in your
book?
I don't
know if you know about that.
Well, I do know that there are a lot of things used in sprays on all fruits and vegetables that you don't necessarily want to be eating. So washing your stuff first is always a great thing. As for apples not having a bitter quality, there are so many varieties of apples out there that it's crazy when you start to think about it. And some are naturally going to be sweeter than others. Some have bitter, some more sour. But do I think that being organic is going to make it less bitter? No, I personally don't necessarily think that's going to affect it in that way.
Depends on what kind of apple, right?
If you want to know what kind of apple, and just make sure if you're not buying organic that you wash things really, really well.
Oh, okay. Then the other one is baking powder. This is an organic question as well.
Okay.
What do you use instead of the chemical baking powder? To do the same thing that baking powder does when you're trying to bake like biscuits.
Well, I could tell you that I ran out of baking powder the other morning and I was baking a cake for company. And so it's 2 parts of cream of tartar to 1 part of baking soda. And I made my own because I ran out. So that's what you do.
The cream of tartar.
The baking soda still has chemicals in it.
Well, the cream of tartar.
Baking soda?
The baking soda and the cream of tartar get rid of the aluminum problem.
Yeah, there's
right?
no aluminum then.
Then you've
Yeah. It gets rid of aluminum.
Because I'm not using any aluminum.
Oh, you're not using it.
Yeah,
okay.
There's no aluminum in baking soda. And
there's aluminum in baking powder?
Yeah, there's aluminum.
There's a lot of crap in baking powder.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah. So cream of tartar, hey?
Yeah, so two parts cream of tartar to one part baking soda.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Appreciate
CJ, thanks a lot. The number to call, we have one open line, 1-800-348-2551. Let's see. Let's go to line number two. Hi, Rachel. You're on.
Hi. I came in late to the program, so I apologize for that. But I'm actually a registered dietitian, and the first thing I heard when I put my car radio on was one of you saying that if you could get canola oil out of the kitchen, you would do that.
Oh, boy. That's me. I'm it, Rachel. Come on.
Okay. No, and I've been listening now since, and I totally agree with everything you say about the other oils and the flavorful oils and all that. But just from a heart health point of view, I tend to tell people that if they did use minimal amounts of canola oil, it would be okay and considered heart healthy. But
You are right.
It certainly
you are right.
Is.
It's that tasteless oils can lead to an overuse of oil, and you can bring better satiety with better taste. That said, a oil like walnut oil is loaded with omega-3s, so you do have good cardiovascular nutritional benefits there. But you're right. You're right. I overstated to throw it out of people's kitchen.
No.
You know, I mean, I'm being a little bit crazy.
But I want to ask you, Rachel.
Still.
Rachel, are you in your car?
I'm in my car.
Are you driving while you're talking? Oh, wow.
Oh, no.
I know. But I'm in Massachusetts. But I know. But I heard. I know that I shouldn't say that. But I heard the eliminate canola oil, and I want to get on the phone. But I wanted to say one quick thing about ramps. I have, and I do. I agree with everything you said about all the oils. So I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I think you make a lot of sense. But canola oil is okay, right?
Sure.
Yeah, it's okay.
Of course.
Okay, so I have tons of ramps in my backyard, which I love.
Yum.
And my favorite thing to do with them is make pesto.
Oh, yum. Oh. Ramp pesto is delicious.
That sounds like heaven.
And for anyone who's not sure about pesto is that paste you make with basil and garlic and olive oil and pine nuts. You just throw some ramps in it. Oh, heaven.
Rachel, thanks
and
a lot
I've
for the call.
I'm sorry. I do it just with the ramps.
Oh, no basil.
And a little nuts, and it's delicious. So
Wonderful.
Anyway, that's it.
Wow.
Thanks for the show.
Rachel, thanks
Rachel.
A lot for the call. And over to Tony in North Adams. Tony, you're on.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a question. I like to steam lobsters, but I seem to come up with a lot of water in them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way I can get rid of that?
Well, yeah. Yes. Before you get it to your plate, there's nothing worse than breaking open a lobster or a cream cloth and having it pour all over your plate. So the best thing to do is when they come out of your steamer or out of your water is you want to bring them over to the sink and you want to sort of crack them open a little bit, like take the knife and cut the body open and crack one of the claws open and drain them out over the sink before you put them on a platter to bring to the table. That way when people break them open to eat them, all that's left is the meat.
But that said, Tony, you can't really get rid of it.
Yeah.
Before that.
It's going to be there. So the best you could do is drain it into the sink before you give service.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks a lot. Let's go to Lisa in Great Barrington. Lisa, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Great program. Having fun listening. And so I had a comment about there was an earlier caller that was talking about thawing fish. And I have a great fish thawing thing that I do. And basically, I get my fish from Trader Joe's, and it comes in these nice, convenient cryovac'd packages. And I just do the same thing that you do with the shrimp and the scallops. I just run the fish under water in a bowl for a few minutes, it's mahi, so it's kind of thin, and it thaws pretty quickly.
And you leave it in the cryovac.
I leave it in the cryovac. Exactly.
Okay, well, that would solve my problem of the sliminess it gets when you just dump it in the water.
Yeah, Mark doesn't want the fish meat in the water, so in the cryovac's a good thing.
Right, because I've done it that way, and it does get slimy. I agree with you there. So I just wanted to comment on that. And then the other thing is, and I came in late on the program, but I love to talk about oil because I'm so confused about it. And I use coconut oil.
Oh, yum.
But it's so hard. Yeah. And, like, so I'm thinking, like, if it's so hard on the shelf, isn't it that hard in your body? Like,
coconut oil solidifies.
Somebody once said, if you look at the kind of oil or butter if it's hard, it's bad for you. And so it was just so confusing about coconut oil being good for you or bad for
you. Okay, just don't forget. I mean, this is every dietitian in the world is going to scream at me, but here we go. Don't forget that you're 98.6 degrees, so you're not a refrigerator. It's
right,
not.
True.
It's not going to be the same temperature in you that it is sitting on a shelf. Secondly, it's going to undergo vast chemical changes inside of you. That is no license to eat down a vat of lard or butter. It's
right.
Just that there are vast chemical changes that undergo between you and it. And just because it's solid on a shelf doesn't mean it's going to be solid inside you.
Right.
I find it hard to work with because it is solid and it comes in those jars that it's hard to get it out. And the thing about coconut oil, it has a very distinctive flavor. So as far as I'm concerned, there's limited usage because whereas I might not mind a little almond oil or walnut oil in the bottom of a stew or in a cake, coconut flavor is very different. So unless I'm making a curry or making a cake that I want that tropical flavor, I find more limited uses for coconut oil.
Well, again, at Trader Joe's, I love Trader Joe's, and I found a flavorless coconut oil in a jar there. Oh. And it was kind of inexpensive, but I was thinking, is this really coconut oil if it doesn't smell like coconuts or taste
well,
like coconut?
Well, once you take the flavor out, they do that by refining it. And the more you refine a product, the less you lose the benefits of it.
All right.
Do you have a good resource that you can recommend that like goes through all this oil stuff? Because oil seems to be a kind of hot topic.
We wrote a book, just to plug myself. We wrote a book about 2 years ago called Real Food Has Curves. It's a 7-step plan to get off processed food. And there was an entire oil chapter in Real Food Has Curves. So we go through all this research kind of in there and what to do with it.
Okay.
I'm going to go and buy that today on my Kindle. Thanks.
Gallery books.
Right. Okay.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate it. Let's go over to Katie in Albany, who is not talking about oil, oddly enough. Hi, Katie.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I really like to make fried rice, but whenever I make the rice for it, it always comes out a sticky mess. I've tried jasmine rice, brown rice, but I can't seem to make it right.
Well, my guess is if it's coming out too sticky, you're probably using too much water to start with. My first suggestion is going to be, if you like to make rice a lot, invest a few dollars and buy yourself a rice maker. And you don't
cooker.
Rice cooker. You don't have to spend a fortune. They go anywhere from $30 to $300. So you could spend a lot or spend a little. It will make perfect rice for you every single time.
What about, Bruce, what about cooking it with the East Indian method rather than the Asian
method? Yeah, Asian method of cooking rice is where you add just the right amount of liquid to the rice. You cook it covered, simmered, or low temperature until it's all absorbed. The Indian method is where, like pasta, you take a big pot of water and you boil the rice in the water, and then you drain it all in a colander. You might want to try that technique. So after about 10 minutes, you just start tasting it. As soon as it's the texture you want, drain it, rinse it in cold water, and you're good to go.
Right.
Sure.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. All right, gentlemen, we have about 30 seconds for a question. Give me one, two, or four. Which one do you want?
Two.
Two. Here we go. Terrence in Albany. Terrence, you're up.
Hi, Terrence.
Hi.
We only got about 30 seconds for your question, okay?
Okay. Real quick, what is the difference between, generic store brand seasonings and more expensive ones? For instance, paprika versus getting Hungarian paprika from, expensive market?
The difference can be, I'm going to say this real quick, the difference can be nil, nothing, or the difference can be everything, and you're only going to know that, here's the sad part, by the taste. Some inexpensive, cheaper spices are the same as the expensive branded ones, made in the exact same factories and put in, in the same, in different bottles with different labels. Some are actually, hand-picked and air-dried and net-dried and blah, 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 and good grief, you're never going to know if you don't taste. And that's the sad truth, Terrence.
Well, Terrence, that's all we have time for. And maybe these guys will write book number 22 on how to differentiate cheap spice from the good stuff. Hey, guys, thanks a lot for being here. It was awful, awful good time. Mark Scarborough and Bruce Weinstein, thanks a lot, guys. And hopefully you come back again, okay?
We'd love to, Rick.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to everybody who called in. Sorry if you didn't make it. You can always post some questions online. By the way, quickly, your blog. Oh, can we turn their mic back on? Yeah,
it is www.bruceandmark.com.
Bruceandmark.com. And if you wouldn't mind checking in on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC radio, you may get some questions there.
Sure,
perhaps you can chime in and answer them. Support comes from Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts, providing printing design for customers for over 20 years, from digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more. ParadiseCopies.com. Skidmore College Master's Program, offering individualized graduate studies in a wide range of interdisciplinary fields. Masters at skidmore.edu. Buttermilk Falls Spa, Milton, New York. Eco-friendly treatments using organic, naturally crafted products and offering solar geothermal heated sauna, steam room, and pool. Open daily, buttermilkspa.com. And Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, announcing an annual open house this weekend featuring plants, flowers, and landscaping tools and products Monday through Sunday, 8 to 5, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. Thanks to our guests today. Thanks to Zachary T. Malloy, who actually was the control room operator on the show. Colleen O'Connell answered the phones. Our producer, Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Astronomy with Bob Berman. Stay tuned now for a news update.